Office of the Dartmouth, Friday afternoon, December 8th. Dear Mother, I was awfully glad to get your letter the other day, and although I have not got it with me, I will try to answer some of the questions you put up. Have I written you since Thanksgiving? Well, I had a very nice time, and I'm really glad that I did not go, in so much as the whole trip cost less than $2.50. It rained Thanksgiving Day, so instead of walking down from Moose Lock to Cube as was planned, some of us ascended the mountain, including Parker Hayden, Dick Lux, and Don Eldridge. Since getting back, I've been more than busy on this office work and will continue to be so till the holidays. Chances of my making the board took a decided slump this week as one of my opponents had been functioning very strongly. For instance, he got his hands on the senior constitution, which is a long article, 50 inches, and several shorter ones, and so he leads me by 50 inches, whereas before we were practically even. However, I have several scoops undercover which will be news in about a week to catch up with him if possible. My marks have been coming along fine lately. I had an idea they send our marks home, so I did not take trouble to tell you what I got for mid-semester marks. Well, I got B in graphics, C in English, and a D in Spanish and Math 5. They are very satisfactory marks, at least in my estimation, as I've considered myself down in Math 5 all along, and he encouraged me in that thought. So when he came through with a D, I was more than overjoyed. Since then, I have had wonderful luck, and on the quizzes which we have been having this week, I've raised most of them. For instance, in English, I got back a paper marked an A, and in math, I got a C. That math was an awful exam, and I had wonderful luck. Finances are the all-important point of the letter. I'm awfully low. I used all that $20 deposit which you mentioned, but which I have no verification of. At present, I have standing bills for shoes, $8.50, books, $8, and this week's board rent, which I am afraid to pay until some money to put in. I paid my December dues Wednesday night. So before Christmas, I will need money to pay my shoe bill, book bill, and board bill, and also a bill of $20 for this half year on the room. You remember perhaps I had to put down $10 last year? I guess I can let that hang over till after the holidays. Oh, I forgot. The other night we had a fraternity jeweler up to the house, and I signed up for an aggregate of $5 worth of Christmas presents. He had a wonderful line and inexpensive. Gee, he must have sold several $100 worth that night at our house. Last year I invested in banners, etc., which amounted up to much more than this does. So I don't think I went wrong. Wednesday night we had a 3-hour fraternity meeting, and after rousing up a lot of pep, we started a campaign for improvements on the house. Pledges ranged from $5, from only two, up to $40, and we raised over $400. With this, we intend to tear down the walls separating two of the downstairs rooms and make one large room convenient for a house dance. I pledged $10, payable before Christmas, so please include that in a deposit within the next few days of at least $35 if I'm to clear up all bills. Well, I must hurry off and do some work. Please make that deposit and let me know about it at once. As ever, Sherman. This letter, written on letterhead, reads, The Dartmouth, founded 1839, incorporated 1913, Dartmouth College, Hanover, New Hampshire. Office of the Editor-in-Chief, 32 Robinson Hall. April 27th, 1917. Dear Alfred, you've been getting to the Dartmouth right along, so I won't waste a lot of time telling you what has been going on up here lately. The big issue is, what is going on down at that Troop B armory? When are they going to be called out? When I was down there, they said it would be in between a week and 3 weeks, and so it is about time they got around to it. I'm beginning to think that they will not be called out at all. There is a persistent rumor here that from now on all cavalry will be dismounted. In that case, I can't see going in on it. I almost feel like a slacker sticking up here when everyone else is packing up and heading out. For heaven's sakes, write and give me some definite knowledge as to when the troop is to be called out and what it is to do then. If it is not to occur soon, I will pack up and join something else. It's almost impossible to get in on the mosquito fleet now anywhere. One of our freshmen is up here on a short leave of absence from Newport and tells of the wonderful time they are having down there. The drill up here is doing me a lot of good and building me up, but I'm restless to be up and doing something. All the seniors that have had any military training have left the training camps, leaving the companies here in command of Plattsburgh freshmen or sophomores. This officer's training camp is a fine stunt, but it is practically restricted to seniors and only those of military experience. I don't understand what Mother said in her last letter. Something of your trying to get into one of these officers' training camps? Really, that would be practically impossible, for you are not a college senior, nor have you had any military experience. So you received word from New Haven, did you? Jack Holtz is waiting to get his call. I don't like to butt into your affairs too much, but I think it would be foolish to pass up this mosquito fleet business. The fellows in it considered it a wonderful experience, and that is just what you need before leaving home for college. You miss all prep school experience, and this mosquito fleet business would be a good substitute. So think it over more than once before you throw it over for an idea of getting into Plattsburgh, which is impossible. All Street came around tonight and told me that he has just got funds and permission from his folks to go to France. They all seem to be leaving. Dusty's roommate is going over and trying to get him enthused, and now that Dusty is worrying as to whether he will be kept out of the cavalry on account of his poor eyes, he is thinking quite seriously of going over. I wish you would tell Mother and Dad that I want to go myself, and see if you can't talk them into letting me do it. It is absolutely unequaled for experience. You can find out all about it from recent issues. Tell them that I can probably get the funds from some alumnus through the president's secretary if they will allow me to join the thing. Two units of 22 have already left college to meet in New York next week, to sail, and a third unit is all but complete. Do this for me, will you? I was assistant on the issue Thursday, and we did not leave the press until 4:15 in the morning. We could read the paper as we walked up the street before turning in. However, I made it up this morning, slept almost till 11 as I only had one class. I am sending an issue of the Bima featuring my article. Ta-ta, Sherm. October 26, 1917. Dear Mother, the two big rooms here are both crowded with fellows writing home, and I was only able to secure a very poor pen, and writing is quite difficult. We are pretty well settled now in a large mobilization camp in England and are very close to the boats over to France. Today our battalion was slated to make the trip across, but for some reason the trip had been postponed, and we have been given the evening off. They never send across troops except in cloudy weather, as there is danger from the Zeppelins and hostile airplanes. The submarines are pretty effectively blocked from the channel now, but there is a constant danger from aircraft, as they can sight the boats from great distances. Last night another regiment marched down to the docks only to turn back as the moon had come out in the meantime. The city here is very pleasant, slightly larger than Hartford. Being a seaport, there is an exceedingly motley crew on the street. Hundreds of our own division, Canadian Reserve Regimentals, English, not many save young pink-cheeked school lads and old men in the garb of the King's Home Guard, New Zealanders, French instructors, and sailors of all nations. Added to these are a large bunch of German prisoners at work constructing roads to enlarge our camp. These unfortunates seem pretty well fed and content, and are dressed in old cast-off military garments. One will have a sailor's trousers, Canadian artillery coat, and a German tasseled cap. One of them has a sailor's cap bearing the band Unterseebooten, which attracts a lot of attention from those of us still fresh through the sub-danger zone. They are guarded by old home guards or partially crippled soldiers back from the front. As for the women, they are also much in evidence. They run the trolleys, do the farm work, skilled labor in factories, etc., and many are driving the heavy auto trucks. Here in England, they observe the left-hand traffic laws, and it is very confusing to us. A bunch of us will be waiting for a car on the left side of the street when a big truck will come whizzing along, and it too slowly occurs to us that the left side to get out of the way. I have been most run down more than once for that reason. Last night, we were allowed out of the camp at 5, and we all made a dash for the city. With three fellows in our agent squad, I had supper at a very good restaurant. After being used to sumptuous spreads in New London, we were far from pleased with the portions of meal we got. Their idea of a satisfactory dinner has slowly diminished till it is greatly different from ours. We had a small steak, a couple little pieces of French fried, salad, bread and butter, and soup for the sum of 3-4, that is, 3 shillings, 4 pence, which amounts to 80 cents in our coinage. There are many Americans in town right along now that our coinage is understood and accepted in several of the larger restaurants. On coming out of the restaurants, we had to fairly feel our way along, for the streets are very carefully darkened, as this city is right in the Zeppelin route and has seen many bombardments. We inquired our way and managed to find a very good pastry shop where we ran up quite a bill. They had many kinds of cakes and cookies, but it was very hard to find a single one at all sweet, as sugar is very scarce. While eatables are very dear, many articles can be obtained here very cheap. For instance, a first-class pair of leather putties, modeled after the $8 or $10 kind in the U.S., are sold here for 8 shillings or $2. Watches can be bought for as low as 2 crown or $2.50. I changed my last $10 bill last night into a pound, 10-shilling note, a couple of half-crowns, 2 florins, a shilling, and 6 pence, a loss to me amounting to about 10 cents. The coins here are very large and cumbersome. Their copper halfpenny is as big and heavy as our quarter, while the penny is as big as our half-dollar. Their smallest silver is a 6 pence, like our dime, shilling, like our quarter, then florin, 2 shillings, half-crown, and crown. For paper, they have 10-shilling note and a pound note. Our camp is just a temporary rest stop. That is, there are no drill fields, and a bunch of soldiers only stay till the weather is suitable to go across to France. We can hear the artillery practicing in the nearby camps, and there are always airplanes overhead patrolling the coast. This combination kind of reminds us that we are not here on a sightseeing tour altogether. So far, it has been just that, and we are having a wonderful time. Still no sign of our guns, but hope they are waiting in France, as I hope also some mail sent direct. Well, I must close now, but I will write soon. Please do the same. Your loving son, Sherm. Hope Dad and Emily are well. November 2nd, 1917. Dear Mother, well, we were trying to get settled down once more after another rather long trip across a good part of France. We left our camp early Wednesday afternoon and were bumping along in the French cars, nothing more than small baggage cars, till this morning. There were about 40 of us in our car, and we had a lot of fun, but very little sleep, as we could not all lie down at once. Our meals consisted of the famous army field rations, hardtack, and tinned corned beef, which were doled out every day. It looks as though our journeying is over for a time, as we'd reached our training grounds. Till our permanent barracks are completed, we are being billeted about in a little French village, 5 or 10 men to every house and barn. Every house in this section of the country is marked, showing the number of troops it can take care of. At present, we are in the small YMCA waiting to be assigned to houses. This noon, we all assembled around the village pump and took a good wash, the first possible in 3 days. Maybe it didn't feel good. All the little French kids came around while we were eating noon mess, and we had a lot of fun with them, trying out our limited French with varied success. Censorship is very strict now, and so there is not much else that I can say. Eats are good now. American plan. Sherm. November 20th, 1917. Dear Mother, well, we are very comfortably settled now in what we hope will be permanent winter quarters. After our 8-day stay in an old leaky shack, we were glad enough to hear that we were going to be billeted. There are 7 of us in a little room over a barn, and we consider ourselves quite fortunate. By the best of luck, we 7 agents pulled the strings, and we were finally given this little apartment all our own. The peasants downstairs are very pleasant, and have helped us fix up the place. Besides our 7 cots, there is just room enough for a little stove, a table, and 2 camp chairs. Our table is a special concession not possessed by most of the other company billets. I've just come back from Chan's billet a few houses down the street, where his squad is fairly comfortably settled at last. Until yesterday, they were without a stove of any kind, but tonight the place looked pretty good. I stayed there until someone, Krupp, I imagine, put some green wood on the stove, and it smoked the place out in good style. Our meals have been improving lately, both in quality and in quantity, and now we always bring some bread back with us to the billet for toast. We are all broke now, but as soon as we get paid, we will have some swell feeds on our stove. We had Wednesday afternoon off, and Jack Wiley and I went on a sightseeing expedition into the large-sized town several miles distant. Between us, we had about 6 francs, but we had a fine time trying out our French on the storekeepers and pricing sweaters, socks, etc. I finally bought a pair of socks and a can of beans, which we consumed that evening. 3 days have passed, during which I had a day on guard, and today was on fatigue, so I have not had time to finish this letter. Yesterday, Sunday afternoon, Jack and I went to town and listened to a band concert by a large French military band. After the concert, it was a fine spectacle to see the stand on the street corner and watch the cosmopolitan crowds throng by. Hordes and hordes of French soldiers, American officers, French generals, etc. The place seems full of them in their cars. American ambulance drivers, British Royal Flying Corps, aviators, Serbian soldiers, etc., etc. All the stores are open Sundays here, and there is such a crowd that every store has to have its own traffic laws. It was worse than Xmas in Hartford. I was broke, but we had a pretty good supper at a table with 5 Frenchmen for only 55 cents, consisting of steak, horse meat undoubtedly, French fried potatoes and coffee, and French bread. Of course, after dark, the streets are all darkened, and the cafe operating in back of curtained windows. We stumbled home in the dark about 7:30. After supper tonight, we staged a little feed up here in the room. Besides we 7, there was McElwain's and Bob Paisley, and we had a feed consisting of heated tomatoes on toast. The tomatoes bought in town and the toast, which we save every meal from our regular ration of 3 slices. We certainly had great times in our little joint here. This morning at inspection by the officers, it was judged the best-looking and neatest billet in the company. Did I tell you that Dr. Meal has been up in the camp again? He left today after preaching yesterday. Unfortunately, I was on guard and did not hear him. The doctors here have been kept pretty busy, but so far I have been feeling very fit. Rap, rap. I noticed that Chan had a little sore throat this morning, but was out drilling this afternoon all right. A company of engineers arrived in town the other day, and among them are 2 Dartmouth fellows, both sergeants. One of them is in my class. Haven't heard from Al Street since my last letter to you, so I don't know whether he can arrange for our meeting. Well, I will close for now. Don't forget to send me those socks, heavy vest, etc. If Al is not using my big heavy outing club shoes, it would be a good idea to send them too. Love to all, Sherm. December 1st, 1917. Dear Mother, I've just been reading your letter to Chan and dated October 17th, which smacks of your anxiety of our voyage over and hope that long before now you have received our cable and also several letters. It seems too bad that all you mothers are doing so much worrying over us, for we never feel it necessary to worry. Were it not for our somewhat unusual surroundings, one would never know that we were not still hanging around Niantic. Since we arrived here, our training seems more of a tangible thing and is becoming very interesting. Today we marched 4 miles over to the shooting range and used real cartridges in the old guns. We agents are chiefly used for signaling purposes, which also is very interesting. This afternoon the 7 of us had our hair clipped close to the head, and believe me, we are a strange-looking lot. The weather is mild for so late in the fall, and everyone is having their hair cropped pretty close. I'm sorry I wasn't able to finish this letter for the postman last night, but somehow it's awfully hard to find time to write. We are limited to 1 letter a day, but we generally don't get time to write that one. Our little billet here is a very popular one evenings, and every night after supper there are nearly a dozen of us in a little circle around the stove discussing things in general, in fact discussing everything except the war. Last night, besides the 7 of us agents, there were Bob Lindley, Jack Wiley, Lloyd Couch, and McIlwain were up, and we had a little feed. We are still all dead broke, anxiously awaiting payday, but we managed to borrow 4 francs, and we had jam and cheese on toast besides some beans warmed over from the evening mess. Fuel for our kitchen and billets is quite a problem here, and about every other day we have to take a trip up the mountains and bring down a big load of wood. We've just been up this morning, so missed Dr. Meal's weekly talk in the YMCA. Yesterday we were over at the rifle range from about 9 till 4, so the wood supply was pretty low for our big Sunday dinner. All the American soldiers got a very good feed last Thursday, which was, of course, Thanksgiving Day. Unfortunately, it fell Company C's turn for guard, and L.S. Green was among the unlucky 21. However, I was not on shift at dinner time, so I received the big meal on time. It consisted of a turkey leg and a piece of white meat, dressing, sweet and white mashed potatoes, a little cranberry and mincemeat, bread and real butter, and a piece of apple pie. A very satisfactory meal in every way. I was on guard from 5:30 to 9:30 and 5:30 to 7:30 the next morning, so I was able to get almost my usual share of sleep. Company C goes on guard again this afternoon, and Chan is acting sergeant of the guard. By the way, Chan got another letter from home last night. It was one you mailed the very day we passed through Hartford on our way here. It is rumored that a carload of our delayed mail is being forwarded from a seaport. I would be very acceptable, for we have had only 2 letters this week. By a coincidence, one of them was yours. I suppose you will be thinking now of Xmas. They are allowing the soldiers to send small mementos home, but we can't do so until we get the wherewithal to purchase them. Please don't send me cigarettes, for strange as it may seem, they are quite plentiful and cheaper here than in the States. The tobacco concerns are allowing the soldiers the old prices before the recent raise in price. However, any sweets such as jam, jelly, peanut butter, butterscotch, or maple sugar would be very acceptable. I'm short on socks, but figure on buying more on payday. I wish you would send along that heavy green lined vest, also any blue football sleeve jersey that is lying around. I am wearing Emily's abominable band, but would appreciate another. Also, a knit sweater with sleeves, and a muffler. I wonder how the second Plattsburgh camp came out. Jack and I were wondering about how Henry got away. Jack seems to think now that his father may be over here before long in YMCA work. That certainly would be a fine experience for a man like Mr. Wiley, and he is just the man who would be doing it. I've received 1 letter from Al sent soon after we left. He seemed to be enjoying himself all right when I was up there, and hope he continues to like it as much. Did he go to the Brown-Dartmouth game in Boston? A little edition of the New York Herald is printed in Paris every day for the U.S. soldiers, and in that I find that Dartmouth was beaten 13-0, whereby I lose 10 francs, for I had that amount up on a bet with a brown chap in the Massachusetts engineers here in town. These engineers are a fine bunch, mostly college men, and I've become quite clubby with a couple of the Dartmouth fellows, also a couple of the Brown fellows, the latter fraternity brothers of Jack Wiley. The Dartmouth is being sent to me, and I've received 3 of them, which went the rounds of the D fellows in town. Got a fine long letter from Bob S. I'm afraid Al Street has left again for America without getting over to see me. The last word I had from him was 6 days before his six-month term was up, and he wanted to know my address, but of course I could not send it to him, so I guess he left without finding me. Ambulance drivers get over here once in a while, and I've run across several who know some of the Dartmouth fellows. We are getting quite clubby with the old man and woman who live below us. I go down quite often and jabber away with the old man. Just at present, he is diligently studying my Parlez-vous Français little book and is a very proficient student. I go down and say bonjour, and he comes back with good morning. She has some very good apples, and we have 10 cents worth every day on payday credit. Well, the mailman is here for the mail, so lots of love to you all from Sherm. Regal Apartments, December 5th, 1917. Dear Emily, at last I found the time to write a good long letter and also have the inspiration, for last night I received a fine letter from you and three others from Rachel, Lucille, and Gerald Sine. Louis Lyman and I just came off guard, and now we have the rest of the afternoon to ourselves. The guard last night was not at all tedious, and I managed to get in 5 hours' sleep. Louis and I were on posts 5 and 6, which are up at the mule shed guarding the mules. Last night we started a little fire in the horseshoer's forge and had a little feast of hot coffee and toast. When I got back to the guardhouse at 3:30, someone had borrowed my blankets, so I proceeded to borrow Jack's, as he was on guard at that shift. I wish I had your letter here now to refer to, but Chan has it just now. It certainly is fine being able to exchange mail with him, for we get news from home so much more oftener. Neither of us have heard from Al for quite a while, but that is not strange, for a good share of our mail is held up somewhere. A couple of carloads arrived in the neighboring city the other day, so for the past few days we have received several sacks daily. Night before last, I had a delicious box of candy from Ethelwayne Bidwell, which lasted just 3 minutes. If you chance to see her, don't mention the fact, for it was marked Xmas goods, and I don't intend to acknowledge it before then. Also, I had a letter from Helen Taylor and Mrs. Pratt. So the dances are starting up again. I'm glad to hear that you enjoyed the one in Farmington so much. It certainly made me homesick when you speak of getting out the old canoe. Mother's last letter told that you finally received our cable and how the old telephone wires burned that day. You are right about our first destination over here, but we did not stay there long. Among the mail last night was an issue, October 30th, of the Hartford Current, and you should have seen us all devour its contents down at the guardhouse. It gave a lot of space to the drafted bunch at Ayer, the dear things. If you people want your eatables and sweaters appreciated, you should send them over here. Of course, anything sweet is at an awful premium. For instance, gumdrops are about $2 a pound. Please send over any cheap tidbits such as butterscotch, gumdrops, or maple sugar. At present, I have 2 Red Cross sweaters, 1 helmet, and 1 abdominal belt. Believe me, I have come to appreciate the value of the latter. Lou said in her last letter that she would knit me a heavy sweater, but if you can knit socks, I wish you would send me a pair. I am short of them. A strange thing happened just now. A French airplane swooped down over our little village, and the pilot dropped a note. It turned out that the pilot was an American in the Lafayette Escadrille, and the note was for his brother in the 101st Engineers here in town. These engineers are a fine bunch of fellows, and I've been quite chummy with several of them, a couple of Dartmouth fellows, also Brown fellows. I hope Mother changes her mind about sending clippings, and believe me, they are very acceptable. They go the round of the bunch here. I'm sorry to see that Dartmouth has felt defeat twice by Penn and Brown. Did Al go to the Brown game? The old couple who live down below us have 2 sons in the war, and one of them is home on furlough at present. He is a fine young chap, 28 years old, a poolie at Verdun. I enjoy going down and talking with him, and last night he came up to see our little apartment. Incidentally, he showed me some fine little snapshots of the trenches and passed around little souvenirs. He gave me a German nameplate off a German field kitchen, also several German rifle bullets. He has been in the war 3 years and has won the Croix de Guerre 3 times. Tonight he is coming up again, and we are going to have a little feed in his honor. Suppose you folks know of our insurance. I intend to take out the full $10,000, which will dock my monthly wage about $7. From now on, we will only get 50% of our pay in cash, so deducting the insurance, I'll allot to Mother about $12 a month. Well, it's mess time, and I must close. Lots of love, Sherm. January 13th, 1918. Dear Al, you may be wondering whether Chan and I are still on the map. Well, we are very much alive, but not kicking, for we have very little to kick about. Our drills take up a good share of the day from the time Old Soul appears over the hill until he sneaks away over another hill. We have become very familiar with our Hotchkiss machine gun, especially since yesterday we had a regular exam on the nomenclature and functions of the numerous intricate parts. It has either snowed or rained almost continually for several weeks and has rendered effective field drills impossible. When the outdoor conditions are the worst, we hold indoor drills by platoon on the nomenclature of the guns. Several days a week, we have target practice. Up to a week ago, we had to march 4 miles to an old French range where the French instructors overlooked our work. Now, however, they have constructed a range up on the hill where we shoot for accuracy. We shoot a clip, and to be good, all 20 bullets should pierce the target within a prescribed 3-inch circle. It requires a firm hand and a steady eye. Other days, we practice on the pistol range. Our automatic Colt revolvers shoot 7 shots in a clip, and we are just beginning to get accurate. Other days, we go through the drill formations, which are very interesting. We have just got to range finding now, and it is quite evident that this is no branch of the service for a bonehead. My college calculus may help me yet. We have gas mask drills about once a week. They consist in practice in getting the mask on quickly, testing for gas, removing gas, etc., and also changing from the more elaborate English mask to the regulation French mask. Then we wear the English one for about an hour just to get used to it. We all enter into these drills earnestly, for it may prove to our advantage later. This sort of mixture of the English and French methods is the bane of our life, for our officers and non-coms go off to training schools of various sorts, and it is funny to see them trying to agree on some formation. The French regiment, which used to come over and direct our formation, has gone up to take another crack at the Huns, and as soon as they went, all their little helpful hints were discarded, and our officers doped out formations of their own. As often as some officers return from some school, our formations change accordingly. And now we learn that we are going to give up the Hotchkiss and learn the workings of the Vickers Maxim, so it doesn't look as if we're going to get into action for some time to come. However, that is the least of our worries. We are very comfortably billeted, well-fed, and worked hard enough to keep in good health. We are so near actual fighting that we can get very little conception of the tide of the war. What we know of it is what we pick up from the French soldiers or what the Paris edition of the New York Herald chooses to make clear. The only disconcerting thing is that never is mention made of the Allied reverses. German divisions are killed so fast that they must breed in the hotbed or war would have long ago been over. The only real news we get is when the Hartford Courant finds its way over here and we fight for the paper, though it is a month old stale. Also, the Dartmouth, which I receive quite regularly, is poured over pretty thoroughly. I wish you would send me the Beam regularly and see that I get the Jack-O-Lantern, too. I have received the Puritan Jacko, and Bill Scoville drew the football Beamer, which I've been perusing today. Please tell Bill Bemis and Dusty Rhodes that McIlwain, Bill Scoville, and I consider their respective magazines up to par, if not better. Also, I got a letter from Dusty recently, which I intend to answer in the near future. How is your military training progressing? I see pictures in the Beamer of quite intensive training. What kind of rifles do you use? Does your instructor cover machine gun work? I hope it does, for it certainly is interesting. Quite a change from the old squads right on the Niantic parade ground, I can tell you. I think I will drop a line to Captain Keene shortly and give him an idea of our instructions as he told me to. By the way, how are you advancing on the Dartmouth competition? Stick to it. Tell Bob Steecher and those other bums to drop me a line. The battalion interpreter is holding classes in French, and Chan and I are among the score in the advancing class. The division headquarters are back of the scheme and are going to furnish textbooks. They have broken up the agent squad, and now I am acting as first leader of Berrydin squad. However, they have not broken up our billet, and we still have the time of our young lives. Well, be good, Al, old kid, and don't get the wandering spirit until they call for you. Your brother, Sherm.
January 20th. Dear folks, I'm going to make this letter short, as it is too good a day to remain indoors long. For the past 2 weeks it has rained almost continuously, but last night it cleared off, and today it is just like March or April. The winter has been so short that the frost couldn't have penetrated very far, and things should dry up in a couple of weeks if the rain ceases, which, however, is doubtful. During the rainy season, the thick mud makes it very disagreeable, as one soon gets literally plastered with it. On entering the billet, we have to scrape it off with a knife. The natives don't mind, as they wear ponderous wooden shoes, which they leave outside the door when they enter. A census taker would have an easy time in France, merely count the pairs of sabots on the doorstep. The last few weeks have passed pretty quietly. Our instruction in machine gun tactics is progressing smoothly, though it is rumored that the battalion is to be equipped with a new kind of machine gun, on which we'll probably prolong our training. And then our captain is still to leave for his term at the officer school, so we're still quite away from the trenches. Our daily training varies from practice at the pistol range, drills with the gas masks, of which there are two, the English and the French, practice in machine gun maneuvers, and also in sighting. And last but not least, actual target practice on a 1,000-inch range. Early this last week, three men were taken from each platoon and are receiving instruction in signaling. They are practically the outgrowth of the old agent squad, and I was one of those chosen. We are known as liaison agents, and our function will be to do all of the signaling. The nine agents are a fine bunch of fellows, and we ought to get along fine together. We practiced four times this last week while the company was trudging around in the mud, and probably after a couple of weeks, we will spend most of our drill hours signaling. Chan and I were on guard the other night together. My post was to guard Company D's machine guns, and as the company was preparing to move from town, there was plenty going on to make my shifted guard seem short. I also managed to get in quite a few hours sleep while off duty. The day after we were on guard, we spent on fatigue duty, cleaning the mud off the streets, etc. Our first box from home arrived about last week. That is, Chan's did. And then that night, I was on guard, a box arrived for me. Chan let me off from the guardhouse long enough to come up to the billet and open it. It certainly was a fine box, and it came in pretty handy. As for the cake, the fellows pronounced it the best that they tasted, and it surely was. We used the malted milk last night. We got a quart of milk, some chocolate, and we melted the chocolate and mixed some fine drinks. Regular Alderman's chocolate milkshake. The flannel sleeping bag will come in handy later, but at present, the weather is too warm. Well, Mother, the fellows are waiting for me, since we're going out for a walk, so I must close for now. Please send another cake like the last one. Lots of love from Sherm. Monday, January 28th. Dear Mother, like all good things, our mail has been coming in bunches lately, but not very much from you folks. Yesterday I heard from Bob Steecher, Maine Sando, twice from Ray, Lucille, Arlene Hayden, Alicia Wolf. One nice letter was my only mail from home, and Chan drew a letter from you. The mail last night was very opportune, for we certainly were low-spirited. We spent the day from very early till after 6 at the large machine gun range, 12 miles distant. We are taken in these large auto trucks to this range where we shoot and maneuver with all the other machine gun units of the division. When they all get lined up in one large field, it certainly is an inspiring sight. Yesterday we were reviewed by the general himself. I can't tell you how many guns there were, but it made a lot of racket. Today we took up some new stunts, such as shooting with gas masks, etc. It was very exciting and enjoyable. Though we're away from 8 till 6, it is not hard as these trucks take us right to the field. Then we get back, the guns have to be cleaned, an hour's job. Then we have to clean up for the next day. As for the letters, we don't write any. Tonight I received two fine packages, one from Uncle Vern and Aunt Mary, and a pound box of loonies from the Dartmouth-Boston alumni. The next letter that I write will be to Aunt Mary, for it certainly was a wonderful box. A cake, a dozen bars of chocolate, panuti, almonds, large box of candied dates, etc., etc. Well, taps has blown, and I still have a lot to prepare for tomorrow. Love to all, Sherm. P.S. Your surmise in Chan's letter was very warm. Write often.
February 4th, 1918. Dear Mother, we have just returned from afternoon drill, and I must hurry to get this letter off before the mailman comes around. Since I last wrote, we have been kept quite busy. In fact, they don't observe any drill hours at all. Almost every day last week, we were taken in trucks over to the divisional machine gun range, 15 miles away. We took up various forms of machine gun fire, including the all-important barrage work, which will probably form a large part of our work in action. The work over there was certainly very interesting, and the general himself drove out and gave us the once-over several days. There were always a good sprinkling of colonels and majors on the large field. Last Friday, we did not go out to the large range, but spent the morning on our own range nearby. We nine agents had a little taste of trench warfare that morning, for we were stationed in the pits just in front of the targets. Our job was to post up the targets and signal back to the number of hits on each. It was quite exciting to squat down in the shallow pits and hear the bullets whiz by or bury themselves in the further side of the pit. That afternoon, I went on guard. There are only two companies in this town now, so Company C has to mount a guard every other day. This last guard was a very good one and quite pleasurable. Saturday afternoon, we were relieved, and I went down street with Art Nielsen. We did not squander much money. My shopping consisted in getting a couple of extra batteries for my searchlight and sending a cable to be read at the Delt banquet, which was scheduled to come off February 9th, according to the dope I got from a recent fine letter from Maine Standona, my last year's roommate. He informed me that Al is coming along fine and is making good on the Dartmouth. I also drew a letter from Bob's teacher the other night and learned that he has been accepted into aviation school. Lucky fellow.
Also heard from Al Street, and he said he was going up to Hartford to call on you and show you his pictures. It was certainly too bad that we couldn't have gotten together before he left France. Now for the main topic. Xmas mail has arrived in the train loads for us last week, and Saturday night I received my second and third boxes from you folks. Believe me, I was certainly glad to get them. I delivered the cake to Dave, and you can bet Chan was soon on hand to receive his share of the contents. The flannel sleeping bags will certainly come in handy. As for the sweater, it is certainly a peach. Already it has drawn admiration from all sides. The heavy sleeves make it very suitable to wear under another sleeveless one. I certainly appreciate the socks and wristlets, as up to now I've been lacking in both of them. The vest is also a very useful article in the spring weather. We were recently equipped with rubber boots, so now I feel well protected from any kind of weather. As for the tobacco and jam, they are both always welcome to a soldier, and my case was no exception. I hope to be able to send acknowledgments to that list of people you gave me, but they may be somewhat delayed, as we have practically no time to get off letters. I'm enclosing a card of thanks, which I wish you would forward to Uncle Charles. Their gift of a chamois money belt will certainly come in handy to me. Lately, our training has begun to take up the evenings. The agents who take care of all signaling must be of service at night, for it is then that machine guns are most active, and so we go out and practice reading and sending with our large signal lights and buzzers. It is all very interesting, but altogether it allows you very little time to yourself. I'm enclosing an embroidered monsieur, which I saw in town and thought might strike Emily's fancy. Well, don't forget to write regularly, even though mail from this end may seem to drop off somewhat. I hope Dad gets the cable Chen and I sent him recently. Lots of love, Sherm. 2:30 a.m., Sunday, March 3rd. Dear Mother, our rules governing censorship have been greatly modified, and doubtless it is not news to you when I tell you that we are now in the firing line. What I fear is that you learned the news and have been worrying. We are comfortable, well-fed, and have an opportunity to sleep, mostly, of course, in the daytime. The danger is really slight, as can be judged from the fact that so far the only battalion casualty was wounded while standing outside his dugout against orders. The company is pretty well spread out, and Chandler is fully 2 miles from me. His lieutenant informed me yesterday that Chan's squad shot a harassing fire yesterday very effectively for a period of 15 minutes. Most of our work is barrage fire to cover the retreat of infantry patrols in no man's land, and the only danger we encounter is the intermittent German shrapnel trying to locate our artillery batteries. This work is certainly exciting, but I will be glad when we're relieved, as we don't get much rest. My work as a liaison agent keeps me on the go most of the time. Most of the activity occurs at night, so during the day we carefully camouflage the gun emplacements and stay in the dugout out of sight. Our 2 meals are brought to us at twilight and dawn. During the day and night, we also have a man stationed at the entrance of the dugout to give the alarm in case of gas. So far we have had 3 alarms, but the gas was very slight and passed soon. In this dugout there are 2 squads in charge of Sergeant Durston, and we have a fine time together. The effect of the shrapnel is terrible in this vicinity. Nothing but shell holes and stumps of trees. I'll write more fully later. Love to all, Sherm. March 28th. Dear Al, we just had the surprise of our lives. We walked into the local YMCA and encountered a real American girl. I came down to invest my last 2 francs and got so fussed that I squandered it on Lucky Strikes when I had just sworn off them. The cheaper brand of cigarettes can be secured here, 1 pack to a man, but as that is the average consumption, we have to rely on cigarettes from home. I'm still receiving red and knitted stuff and wish I could trade it for good cigarettes. We were warned that we were toting around too much surplus stuff, so today wristlets, scarves, etc. were not worth much on the stock market. We lined up a bunch of kids here and plastered them with the knitwear. Adorned them with belly bands around their neck and body, wristlets on the arms and legs, and a couple of helmets so that they were pretty effectively camouflaged. It certainly is a shame to throw away things that took so much effort on someone's part, and as for myself, I have kept all of my stock, 5 sweaters, 4 helmets, etc., as far as possible. I wrapped up 2 sweaters with that pair of galoshes to be indefinitely stored with the supplies. If the folks feel philanthropic, get them to send a box of 100 NURADs or some kin smoke. I've burned Camels, Fats, and Lucky Strikes so long that I'm pining for some real good cigarettes. Murads are my favorite smoke at present, and I sponge on whoever I know happens to have any. I wrote a long letter to Mother yesterday, and suppose she will forward it to you. Congratulations on making proof and copy. When are the 1921 editors picked? I just received a copy of the D, which contained a bunch more of my letters. Seems to me I ought to realize a little guilt for filling so much space, but suppose you do credit for the thing. Write often, Sherm. Mac and I want to be remembered to the gang, etc.
Somewhere in France, July 25th, 1918. Dear Mother, well, today is the big anniversary, 1 year in the service, and I am celebrating by taking a trip to Paris. The only way to get to Paris is to get wounded, so I contrived to get in the way of a tiny piece of shell early this morning. I suppose you have already been notified that I was slightly wounded, so I'm taking the first opportunity to emphasize to you how really slight it was. The piece of shell was hardly bigger than your thumbnail, and we were so busy at the time I didn't realize I was hit for some time. I felt a little sting just above the knee, and it was Chan who told me to report to the medical man in the unit. The result is that I'm enjoying a fine ride on the splendidly equipped Red Cross train bound for some base hospital. Since I was hit this morning, I have taken 4 rides on as many ambulances between hospitals of various sorts. I have had a wonderful chance to appreciate the fine hospitals or network of hospitals scattered throughout France. I was checked in and out by the advanced first aid station, then the field hospital, evacuation hospital, and next the base hospital. Every step they would give us chocolate and cigarettes and ask if we'd eaten. We managed to get 2 dinners and a supper and feel quite at ease with the world at present. We are not refusing any eats lately, as we have considered ourselves fortunate to get 1 meal a day during the past week or so. You know the special function of our battalion. Well, we came into our own last week and have been constantly on the move ever since. Our division has been active for some months, but it has seen more action the last 2 weeks than all the rest combined, and they have fought a battle that would make the April Battle of Hartford fame look like play. However, relief is near at hand, and I think we'll be enjoying a furlough by the time you get this letter. I left Chan feeling well and suffering neither from oversleeping or overeating. Supper is over, and the crowd here on the train are pretty cheerful. Most of them display their passport, bandaged hand, leg, etc., and all agree they are lucky to enjoy the trip, fine eats, etc. My wound isn't visible, so I have to limp a little to let the other fellows know I am not stalling. You guessed rightly our present sector, and just this morning I passed through that town, initials the same as the state we lived in before moving to West Hartford. It looked quite peaceful. Peaceful, as you can imagine. Well, Mother, I think I will close now, but we'll try to write again before my little vacation is over. Don't complain to Chan if you don't hear from him often, because correspondence is about as ridiculous as furloughs in this kind of war. Love to all. Sherm. P.S. This train is branched off from the Paris route, so I guess I don't get to see the big city after all.
December 6th, 1918. Dear folks, quite a bit of mail has come in from time to time, but none of it from Dad. If this week is a sample of the Army in peace times, give me war. Now that we fit the war for them, they are working us overtime to make soldiers of us. In the meantime, they seem to figure that since the YD never retreated during the war, they can't very well make a strategical retreat to the U.S. now. Starting last Monday, we have been on the go steadily, eating breakfast by candlelight, and supper too. Our platoon is especially out of luck, as we hardly have time to climb the steep hill to our billet between calls. We rise at 6:30, eat at 7, drill from 8 to 11:30, eat at 12, drill from 1:30 to 3, fall in for retreat at 3:30, and eat at 4:30. After supper, we have just about pep enough to climb the hill again and flop onto our floor areas. Taken all in, it's a pretty stiff program, but as long as we stay well, it is great stuff for the Constitution. So far, I have enjoyed the satisfaction of staying up with the best of them, although I haven't had the benefit of a furlough or a trip to the hospital. Another bunch were sent on furloughs from this division, but as this outfit is still in quarantine for the flu, we weren't able to send any. You have probably heard of our latest Gold Star, the one displayed in Washington Street. That sure was unfortunate. He was a fine fellow, and always good-natured and thoroughly a gentleman. It's too bad he had to die a private, but he didn't get along with certain of the superiors any more than some others of us.
December 8th. It is now Sunday afternoon, and we are enjoying a little respite. I was unlucky enough to draw guard, as was also Mac Wiley, so we will have to wait until next Sunday for a chance to write, etc. Yesterday's papers were quite interesting. Our beloved Pershing gave a resume of the work of the AEF in this here war and very carefully ignored the 26th Division. 3 other divisions were given credit for certain of our feats, and twice he concealed our work under such titles as an old division, a division from the Vosges, etc. He certainly did do himself famous and made himself even more popular with us.
You may be able to take the credit from us, but this casualty list kind of bring out the fact that we were over here somewhere. Perhaps you also noticed that Secretary Baker now says that the veterans' divisions, implying the good fighters, must remain over here until peace is declared. Meanwhile, the draft divisions, newly arrived, who come in for all the cream and glory in this war, are going home in bunches. C'est la guerre. So you won't need to look for us before spring. Somehow I can't look forward to another winter over here. Another winter of stiff drill, guard, etc., and all the time taking orders from an ignorant bunch of non-coms who owe the distinction to their nationality and code of ethics identical to a certain individual higher up. Please get reconciled to my being a private, as that's all I'll ever be in this outfit. Wish you could see the company now and compare it to the one that left Hartford once.
The present brains of the company and his circle of underlings were not in the company then. Practically all of them joined down there in Niantic after we were hard up for men and the standards had been necessarily greatly reduced. As far as brains, courage, and all-around capacity, any of the old troop could hold down any non-com job in this outfit, while the present regime would not make bad rear rank men.
A letter labeled 37, YMCA paper, January 5th, 18, should be 1919. Dear Mother, very little mail has reached us lately, but I was most fortunate the other day. Two letters from you, December 10th and 12th, and also one from Ray. If I knew Al wasn't very busy, I'd call him down, for I haven't heard from him since September, which isn't at all right. However, I've written very little myself, so I can't kick. Your letters were nice and lengthy, full of news and a few clippings. We are glad to know that all the family are back in health again. Suppose Emily is skating on the pond and perhaps skiing down the front hill. We were glad to get the blueprints of the Williams house, which surely will enhance the neighborhood.
I'm glad you never received the letter I wrote just before the armistice, and hope it never shows up.
That and the letter to Miss Lely were the only two I attempted, and I regretted sending them immediately. I was feeling low then. In fact, the armistice didn't cheer me up as much as it should have done. Chan surely was lucky to get his furlough at that time, and he came back looking fine. I guess I told you before that I got that check from Dad all right, and it came at a very good time, as I went 4 months before being paid. Since getting that pay, I have naturally been pretty well off, but repeated trips to the YMCA between meals has depleted my purse somewhat.
My summer mail finally came, well, that is, some of it. But a good cheer never has, and I guess never will.
A note from Sherman's mother. Summer mail, referred to here, came, some of it at least, the next summer in fall. Also, I cannot tell from Sherman's writing, or my memory, if it is a Miss Foley or Lally who he is referring to next.
So you think I should write to Mrs. Hayes? By the time I return, I'll be pretty proficient in that line.
Besides that letter to Miss F., I wrote to Mrs. Collins, mother of my most admired chum, Bob, and last night I wrote to Mrs. Lampkins,
and also mailed her Walter's locket and rings, which he entrusted to me on that fateful morning before the ambulance arrived. We only learned of his death recently, which makes me the only survivor of that four-man crew. The three of them, Bob Collins, Walt Lampkins, and Ken Finlayson, were very much alike, all pleasant, straightforward, courageous, and very popular. It's quite evident from doings in West Hartford that the new principal is a great success. Perhaps you are right about Emily and her PG course, but of course that's mainly up to her. Please don't consider me when you make your decisions, because I have no idea of going back and masticating my former generous cut of the family money bags pie. Still, as Dartmouth has granted me a year's credit for my participation in the war, it would be a shame to have 1 year keep me from a degree. This scheme of sending fellows to England to study appears to be like a good share of the YMCA work. It makes a good showing in magazines. I doubt if it will ever come to a head. In the meantime, I have corresponded with the proper authorities and will get all of the dope on the project if anything develops. Nothing out of the ordinary happened last week. It rained every day and most of every night, but of course that didn't interfere with the drilling. The sun came out for a little while on New Year's Day. We had a fine feed, roast pig, mashed potatoes, etc., etc. I've forgotten what else we had, but anyway, I suppose Chan had told you. After the dinner, we sat around in the mess hall and sang, and all the vaudeville talent.
Unfortunately, the rest of this letter from Sherman is missing.